Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the Down and Third Man pod. Jono introducing this week instead of Ash because Ash didn't want to mix up his words. Lots to talk about this week with the usual, with Jono, myself, with Aid and with Ash. And we've got a very special guest joining us from the south of the country. Very proud to say that we've got, in my opinion, a club cricket celebrity and a club cricket star in Dan Allen from Sandyside Cricket Club, master of the YouTube channel, master of commentary, and master of club cricket of the south, I'd say, Dan. Big welcome and a big thank you for coming and joining on the pod.
It's an absolute pleasure, chaps. Lovely to be here. I think it's episode 6, isn't it? But anyway, I'll let you work that out.
Great start, Jono. Yeah. It is episode 6, but we won't mention it.
The lad who teaches maths has never been particularly good with his numbers and arithmetic, but they'll let me off because it's the first time he's let me loose with the introduction, and probably the last he's ever let me loose with the introduction. Gents, welcome. Welcome. Pleased to see that most of us have got a drink in hand anyway. That's pleasing to see. Big shout out before we start and go any further just to our sponsors and host, Woodstock Cricket. Turner, I know you've had some clobber delivered today. What do we make of it, pal?
I've got to say, to be fair to the boys, absolute top quality. This hoodie I'm in is possibly the warmest thing I've ever worn. So I was just saying to Aid, I think I might wear it for warm-ups in April and September, but I don't somehow think I might be wearing it in July. Otherwise, I might do because I might end up a few stone lighter, but... Probably not preferential.
As well, Tina, don't you?
Oh, mate, I might do tonight. Bit warm.
But no, it looked good. Looked very good. So if you want to have a look at the kit, go and have a look at Ash's Twitter account on the Third Man Twitter account as well. You see Ash beaming smile, glasses and all. We've seen the Asian version of you at the cricket today, Ash, as well, haven't we?
Yeah, I can't believe you spotted Ash, my cousin, Ash Winter.
Ash and Turner in the crowd.
My cousin.
I'm Emma Bad, or however you say it, I don't know. Can I just throw it out there before we go any further as well? If I hear one more time, what a beautiful stadium this is. If I hear it one more time, I am going to go insane. I've never heard a day's commentary where we've talked about a cricket ground more in my life.
I'll be honest, mate. The highlight of my day was the five-minute conversation about how amazing it is that it has ramps for the disabled to watch the cricket. Now, it might just be me, but I thought every sports ground in the UK has had that for a good decade or two.
You thought so, but if I let my opinions go, then our 12 Indian listeners will probably turn into two again. Right then, so we're going to talk about the first test, the first day of the test, shall I say, and a little review on that. I think it might be brief, like England's innings, a little bit later on. We're going to have a quick chat about the 100 now that the drafts are all completed. And the fixtures and the kits are confirmed and the players are confirmed, and there's been a bit of outrage on social media about whether people are bothered or not. Obviously, we spoke to Benny Howell last week and he talked about getting involved with his team. And we're also going to plug our live podcast that we're going to do on Sunday. I think you'll probably talk a bit more about that, Turner, as we go on later on, won't you?
I'll warn people that they've got to listen to us without any filters.
Still time to enter our competition, though. So we're still looking to give away 3 Woodstock duffel bags. Me and Aid have got a hands-on one each. Not just one between us. I know we have to share a bat, but we don't share a bag as well. It's embarrassing enough just to share kit, never mind a bag too. But great piece of gear. Really appreciate the guys at Woodstock and Johnny, who's on the podcast last week. So go and check them out. There is a discount code for 25% off on our Twitter and social media accounts. So if you fancy getting yourself some free kit at a discounted price before the season, go and give them a look. So being that we love club cricket and we love North Staffordshire and country club cricket, I'm going to have my little fangirl moment and introduce Dan properly. Dan, the man Dan, a YouTube channel that's got over 1.5 million views, Dan, from a village cricket club. How many subscribers were up to? Last time I checked, we were up near 30,000 subscribers. Is that right?
It's about 18,600 and something when I last looked.
So we're getting there. All of this from a village cricket club then?
I know, it's bonkers, isn't it? And I have to say, the actual views are, since I started, are over 5 million. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Delighted it's happened. Completely unplanned. Totally unexpected. And I've created a monster that is now, I now have to feed forever, probably.
That kind of brings us on to our first point of order then, Dan. Before we get talking about the YouTube channel then and more recently, why don't you talk us through, because we're fascinated by this, we love club cricket on the pod. Why don't you talk us through your Sanderstead journey then? What's your cricket journey, your club cricket journey like?
So I was born and brought up in Leicestershire into a cricket family. So it's kind of in the blood. Played for a club called Great Glen in South Leicestershire, beautiful part of the world. Went to university 3 years in Norwich, played some good cricket there, and then got a job down in London and needed a club to play for. Two of the lads that I played cricket with at university, Chris and Andy, they were from Sanderstead and Sanderstead players, and they said, well, look, why don't you come and, you know, try out at Sanderstead? So I did. That was 1986, and I've been there ever since. So I think this is my 35th year coming up, and it's a beautiful place, a beautiful ground, great tradition, great history, I'm delighted that I've been able to have 35 brilliant years there.
Absolutely, but that's a proper club cricket story, that is, as well, isn't it? That is it. That's a journey I think most of us can probably relate to, because we've all got a little story, a little journey to get into our cricket club. And I'm sure there's cricketers and club cricketers and committee members up and down the country that relate to that as well. So obviously your club cricket journey has ventured into the social media and the technology side. What about the family then? Are the family all kind of taken up your mantle of playing since you've finished? For those who don't watch, well, don't follow the YouTube?
Well, I've got three kids, children, and two of them play. One, my son, he's the oldest, he's 23, James Allen, or Jallon, as he's known. He's an excellent cricketer. He played quite a bit of Surrey age group cricket. Actually played with Popey, born the same day as Ollie Pope. They're pretty good mates, and they played together quite a lot. Their paths went in different directions because James prefers having a drink and having a party, whereas Ollie is an absolute workaholic and totally dedicated. So James is good. Plays in our first team, or has played in our first team. He's been at university and you know, doing other things, and he's taking up golf a bit. But you know, he's a good cricketer. And then my youngest daughter, Lucy, also plays. She's 16, well, just 17 now. And she plays in our junior setup and plays in our Sunday 11. And the absolute joyous moment, not last season, but the season before, where James and Lucy actually batted together a couple of times in our Sunday games, and I was filming, and they got consecutive 50 partnerships, which now that is just the, if nothing else happens in my family's cricket journey, then that's it. That's, you know, to see your son and daughter put on a 50 partnership twice in succession is absolute joy. And they're on film, so anyone can see them. They're on the channel.
They are indeed. And for avid watchers of the channel, they've probably seen it. We're actually, Dan, joined by another cricketer on our podcast who not only comes from a family of cricketers, but also shares the name of the other cricketer in his family. Aid, why don't you share with Dan your little family cricketing journey and name situation?
Oh, mate, I haven't got time to name all these cricket clubs I've played for tonight, have I?
I was going to mention the lack of loyalty.
Going to mention the story, actually. As Dan's just mentioned, obviously, about his two kids batting together. There's one about me and my old man batting at, I think it was Bagnall, I think. Sentinel had come down, watched, take a few pictures and that. Pro was on, ended up getting about 105 wickets, I think, for the season. We're 9 down. I says, right, you face the pro, I'll face the spinner. So I hit the spinner for a couple of fours. Next over, my dad's on strike. Cameraman's ready. All three pegs, mate, out the ground in the sentinel on the Monday.
Incredible. So for the benefit of those who don't know, Aid and his dad share a name. And by this talk of their stumps being everywhere, also share cricketing ability.
Aid's dad's better, let's be fair.
Yeah, well, Aid's dad probably is better. So a bit more recently, Dan, as we've mentioned, the YouTube channel. Talk to us about how a cricket club in Surrey went about starting a YouTube channel.
Well, it was me, really. It was never intended to be a channel or anything big. James was a good cricketer, and I've always been a little bit of a dab hand with a camcorder and stuff, and like family holidays and that kind of stuff. And I thought, well, I'll film some of his play. This is when he was probably about 14, 15. And then he broke into our first team. When are we now? We're talking 2016. And I thought, well, I'll film a couple of the lads' matches. You know, James is playing. This will be good to, you know, I played first team cricket there. It'll be good to get him playing some first team cricket. So I filmed three or four games in that season. And I thought, well, what can I do with them? You know, so I kind of edited them a little bit. And I thought, well, I know, I'll put them on YouTube because, you know, I want the lads to be able to see them. And what's the alternative? Hey, lads, come round to my house and I'll show you this footage. But if it's up on YouTube, then I'll send a link round and then anyone can watch it. And that's kind of how it started. And then I think then 2017, I filmed quite a few more games. And I noticed that the views were going up, and I saw that this particular game had 1,000 views, and I thought, well, that's can't be right. That's not just our lads watching it. And then it sort of dawned on me that obviously other people were finding this stuff, and I kind of didn't know how that might happen. But the views started to climb, and then I started to sort of go at it properly. I thought, well, hang on, there is something in this. I've clearly created something that people want to watch and are watching, and the views just grew and grew and grew, and then subscribers came in. 2018 was huge, and it's grown from there, really. So it started really just me filming my son James, and has turned into this, as I said at the start, this monster, which is an absolute joyous monster. I love it. I reached a stage where my cricket, or my body allowing me to play cricket at the standard that I've been used to, or the level I've been used to, it just wasn't going to happen anymore. And I got frustrated at, you know, not being able to do with my body what my head wanted it to do. Making myself very foolish in the field, as old codgers do. So I thought, well, you know, I don't want to umpire or score, so I'll do this. So I've kind of invented, by accident, a new thing for codgers to do when they don't want to umpire or score. And I'm now going to make it my mission, or I am making it my mission, to spread the word, try and teach people how to do this. Ultimately, I want to see if we can make clubs discover a way to become financially independent and, grow grassroots cricket.
That's a nice message to finish on. I mean, we've mentioned on the pod before as well, Dan, that we look at a lot of this Australian grade cricket, and we look at even the Australian club cricket, and you see some of the clubs and the highlights that are available to you are absolutely unbelievable. The streaming. I mean, I watched this, it just goes to show how much lockdowns affected me. I watched James Pattinson playing for a club side in Australia, bowling 90 mile an hour rockets at university students for about an hour and a half last week. Mm. And it was just being played on a park. And I think you've tapped into something quite intuitive, certainly in this country. And I know there's, we've mentioned when we've spoken as well, there's three bridges in the Sussex League as well.
Yeah.
Who are another good watch, different league, different structure, different kind of outlook on things. And then you've got, I think there's another club down your way as well, Dan, isn't there? That have branched into a bit of...
Yeah, Hawley. Hawley they started last year. Yeah, Three Bridges, they've been doing it for a while. I think they might even have started before I did, or around the same time. And their stuff's great. I mean, they're a premier club, so they're sort of top league, really good cricket. They've got amazing camera gear. I mean, I'd love to sort of see their setup, because what they create looks fantastic. I have sort of made comments occasionally where I say I wish they'd do commentary, because I think it's so important to give the footage a narrative, because for me it's all about storytelling, and that's you know, apart from the fact that it's relatable content, people love to see the sort of cricket that they might play in. You know, we're all fascinated by watching other people's, you know, club cricket, really. There's so much international cricket and T20s and IPL and all that kind of stuff. That's everywhere. But, you know, I think, and that's entertainment. But to watch a game of club cricket where you've got people making all the mistakes that we all make week in, week out, I think just has something really sort of unique and different about it. And so it's proved. I mean, it's one of those things you would never have thought it unless you actually saw it happen, i.e. people really watching this stuff.
Yeah, and the entertainment thing is a great point as well. I think about a couple of certainly my favourite moments from it, probably a Hayes and Saturday night that I can think of. Certainly some of the early season stuff and some of the friendlies that you play against those travelling teams, they're a good laugh. I think I've seen a man, I shouldn't laugh really, but I'm sure the lads will agree with me, seeing a man seriously injure himself on a cricket field and then be blessed by a man as he walked off the cricket pitch was a pretty entertaining watch, I must say.
The guy doing the blessing was my mate Chris from Norwich University. He's the guy that got me into the club. But no, I love the Sunday games. I mean, I have to be on the Saturday with the first 11 league stuff. I have to be quite sort of serious, not necessarily for our guys, but you know, you're filming good cricketers and playing good cricket, and you know, we all know what that's like to be involved in, so I have to tone down my the sort of commentary style, but Sundays is when, you know, I can relax. Everyone knows if they're being filmed on a Sunday, then I've got license to go wherever I want to go with it. And the guys in our team, they kind of love it. You know, Del gets so much stick, dear old Derek Rushforth and Matt Harris. I really love that. That's real proper grassroots cricket where anything goes. And, you know, we all laugh at people falling over and dropping catches and all that kind of stuff.
That is it. I'm sure Aid would back this up. Aid, do you want to describe to Dan kind of what the makeup of our third team is on a Sunday? You featured a few times.
Oh, God, mate.
I think we'd make good money.
Was it Sandbach we played away? And we started with Choo Choo keeping. And no one's going to know what Choo Choo was like, but oh, my God, he's village. That's one way to put
character.
It. We started with about six or seven players because we were waiting for, obviously,
a Corful.
Yeah, a Corful, basically, yeah.
All in a Corful.
It was under 17s, whatever, to under 19s, turn up. And I think for two or three overs, we were actually fielding with, like, five outfield players. It was
all of this.
It was an eye-opener.
All of this, would you believe, Dan, captained by a very short man. Now, we absolutely all love Fias on the Third Man podcast, but...
John, I'll just stop you there, mate. Give him a shout-out for Ali Barbers, mate.
Yeah, a shout-out to Fiali Barbers. But Bingham Cricket Club's finest sponsor, Fiali's Barber Shop. Not currently working, obviously, but when he is, I'm sure you can all go and book your appointments through Fi. But, Dan, would you believe that we have... he's just... How do I describe him, Ralph? He's a very small man.
You know, if you've got your stumps in cricket...
Yeah.
He's probably to the bales...
No,
he's just a bit higher, yes.
I admit watching him umpire and questioning whether he could actually see over the stumps. Yeah, I wasn't saying it sarcastically, I was genuinely
concerned. He bowled some lovely flighted off-spin.
Yes, he has to bowl flighted off-spin because it's the only way he can get it down to the other end. But we do love Fias and everything he does. So what do the lads make of this then, Dan? Because I know, obviously, me and Aid play together. We all talk. And I know that if I'm being perfectly frank, if I rocked up in a few weeks' time and said, right, listen, lads, we're going to start streaming the games, half of them would look at me with a look of shock and horror and say, absolutely no chance. So has everyone been pretty accepting and kind of chipped in and enjoyed being involved?
Yeah, but, I mean, they really have. No one's said otherwise, and I'm always very, you know, I know the guys. They know that I think it helps that I've been at the club for forever. So, you know, and they, yeah, I mean, most of them absolutely love it. You know, because they can use the games to their advantage, i.e. they can watch themselves play, and they a lot of them use that to improve their cricket. There's nothing better than watching yourself to sort of learn from that and improve, you know, certain parts of your game. But I think they like the attention. That's the wrong word. But I think the fact that they are part of the club. You know, we get a lot of people that want to come and join us and play for us. Probably not necessarily with, you know, the best intentions. I think some people just want to, you know, be on the telly, as it were. So, you know, we got to be quite careful on that, and we are. You know, it's a club for the local area. Most of our players, nearly all of our players, are, you know, Sarnerstead, South Croydon people. So, you know, we don't have. Imports. We don't have overseas players. We have in the past, but not for a few years. And it is a community that we have. And yeah, I think everyone loves it. I think because it's done in a sympathetic style. It focuses on the cricket and tells a story. And yeah, that's I'm waffling. But to cut a long story short, no one has complained. Or stormed off in a huff.
Good. And you mentioned in your previous answer about clubs becoming independent. So I just wanted to kind of like tie in this bit with something that you've got going on the channel. And I know I've mentioned it to quite a few people around our club, actually, because I've noticed a couple of clubs local to us have started this. So clubs becoming independent. Do you think there's an untapped resource in stuff like social media and YouTube with clubs then in cricket?
Well, yes. You know, whether it's accessible to everybody, time will tell. But I think there is, and well, I can see that there is, because we do generate income from the channel, from our partners, stroke sponsors, getting involved because, you know, they get exposure.
We might have lost Dan there. He did pre-warn us that if we lost him, we were just going to crack on. And I'm sure he'll be back with us soon. Presumably, the lads can still hear me because I hope I'm not just doing it on my
own. Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
So we'll just wait for to Dan. The internet, fibre optic mustn't have made its way down to Surrey, I'm afraid. So we'll give Dan the opportunity to come back. Shall we, whilst Dan's away then, lads, before he starts finishing off about fundraising efforts, shall we, Turner, do you want to mention the podcast on Sunday?
Yeah, so on Sunday we're going to try, and we'll see how it goes, but we're going to try to do a live podcast, because we try and stick to our sort of Wednesday, Thursday recording, but that doesn't give us much of a chance to record, to talk about the third test and then talk about the upcoming fourth test with how it falls. And we've had a few people, I think it was one of Jono's relations, Nick, asking if we could do a live one. So we're going to give it a go. So at 7 o'clock on Sunday, we're going to do a live podcast. You can find the link to listen. It'll be on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of that. And it basically, we just want people to listen, people to just give us a few questions if they can. I'm sure we'll tell you how to send them. It'll probably be through Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, and just sort of let us know what you think as well as us, because to be honest, we sit here and we talk and we could be talking absolute rubbish, or you might think we are. So we'd just love people to get involved, and if it goes well, maybe it'll become maybe a bit more of a regular thing whereby we'll do quite a few of them possibly in the future. If it's successful. If it's not, it was a good laugh anyway, wasn't it?
I'm looking forward to it. I hope there's some good things get sent in, because I'm desperate to talk absolute nonsense for half an hour.
We're going to have to do a makeup and brush your hair as well, aren't we?
Well, if it's live, we might have to make an effort. There'll be none of those Christmas lights going on in the background like you've got on now.
It's giving lovely people they're
giving people epilepsy.
Jazzing it up, is it?
We'll be getting words. Let's move our discussion then to something we're going to talk about a bit later on, but we might as well bring it forward now. Let's have a chat about the 100. Drafts have been completed this week. Overseas players are confirmed. What do we make of it, Lyle?
Well, because I've seen it's three overseas players, isn't it, per squad, is it?
Three or four, yeah.
How many are allowed to actually play per game?
I think it's two or three, probably three, I would guess, but I'm not sure. I think they've got four and they're allowed three, but...
What did we make of the social media outcry then? Because there's been a right mixed response this week. I don't know whether anyone's seen, but if anyone's looked on social media, there's a mix of journalists, players, ex-players, people who want to give their two penny. It's been a bit... mixed bag would be kind, Turner, I think, wouldn't it?
Yeah, there seems to be three kinds of people out there. One is county cricket fans who are adamant that it's the worst thing that's ever happened to the game of cricket and should never be allowed. There seems to be the people who just don't really care, which in the main seems to be people who aren't really interested in cricket anyway. And then there's people who are, like myself, I would say, I understand how important the counties are and I love watching bits of county cricket, but as someone from a minor county who hasn't got a county to support, I feel like I can totally understand why the ECB have felt the need to do something like this. So I think it's a bit, it's just been a bit, I find it a bit OTT from some people. They get very, I can understand it because I'm sure if the same happened to the Vale or something, you thought they were being marginalised, you thought that they might go bust, you would of course not be happy in. But I just, for me, I don't know. I think the ECB have got the right idea. I don't necessarily think five ball overs is the right idea, but I think the eight city teams, the new competition was needed.
Well, even though my maths was crap earlier, mate, and I couldn't count to five or six, all I'll say is I know five goes into 100 and six doesn't. So that's all I'll say.
Well, it does, but we did a little sort of like tester one. We had a little tournament at the club for one of our festivals, and we went with what they originally suggested, which was six ball overs, then like a super over at the end that was 10 balls, and it worked really well. And actually, a lot of us that weren't sure about the idea watched that day, played in that day, and thought, you know what, actually, this might be a really good idea. It keeps it under 3 hours. It's nice and quick, and it just worked. And we quite like the novel idea of this super over at the end and trusting one of your bowlers. Wherington, who was it you trusted? Like, at first, it was the quickest bowler, not aid. And then it sort of changed throughout the day as people tried spinners and different options. And I thought it worked, and I didn't mind it. The only thing that grates for me is that I don't think there was a need to change that and go five ball overs. As much as I understand, like you say, it's easier to do the maths, I don't think it'd have mattered that much. But
the only argument I'd make is we're trying to get people involved in cricket. That's what it ultimately burns down to, isn't it? We're trying to innovate, make things more exciting, get more people involved in cricket. And it's all right for us all to sit here because we all love cricket anyway. I mean, if there was the most dirt game of cricket on in the world, we'd probably go and pay good money to go and watch it, because that's what we enjoy. If you like setting yourself on fire, you'd go anywhere to go and set yourself on fire, wouldn't you? As weird as it sounds. So, Dan, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. I don't know what happened there. My entire machine froze, but I don't know how much of that you've got.
Well, we took the mic and said that fibre optic hadn't made its way down to Surrey. but I think we got through to the untapped resource of funding in cricket clubs anyway. We just kind of diverted, kind of skipped ahead to the end, and we've had a chat about the 100. Now, us three are all pretty up for the 100. We live in Staffordshire, haven't really got a major county well, they're not a million miles away, but we haven't got a major county to support anywhere near us for sure. Yeah. We're kind of equidistant. Where are we equidistant to? Lancashire, Derbyshire, Worcestershire, yeah. Warwickshire. You can take your pick of going all them, but it's a day out for sure.
Yeah.
What's the feeling around the lads at Sanderstead? What are your feelings of the 100?
Well, my view, you know, as a new tournament, I kind of don't mind it. I love watching the Big Bash. I think they do it really well down under. I will go and watch some of the, I can't remember what we call the County T20 tournament here, but I will go and watch that at the Oval. That's a great night out. We often go up there. So as a tournament, I kind of don't mind it. But as an objective, you know, the stated aim of the ECB is that the 100 is designed to get more people into the grassroots game. And from that point of view, I think it's completely misguided. I don't think it's going to have any difference to whether people will play cricket at grassroots level. Yes, I'm sure ultimately once all the hoo-ha's done about, you know, the haters and the traditionalists don't like it and all that kind of stuff, it will get an audience because it'll bring in the best players. So it will be a great piece of entertainment, I'm sure, either live or on telly. But as a thing that gets more participation in grassroots cricket, I don't think it's going to have any difference. You know, that's my view. I'd be interested to know what you guys think.
I'd come back to the question then. So your youngest, imagine you take your youngest for the first time to go and watch the 100.
Mm-hmm.
And then she says to you, right, Dad, I want to go and play cricket. I've been and watched that. It looks absolutely brilliant. I fancy a bit of that. That looks really good. And then you take her down to a cricket club for the very first time. And I don't know what kind of format your juniors play, but certainly most of our juniors until they get up to 16 to 18 is pairs time cricket. So it's four overs a side. No mm-hmm. one's ever out. You just lose runs.
Yeah.
And she turns around to you and says, Dad, this isn't what I watched. This is crap. Hasn't solved the problem, has it?
No, what you described doesn't happen. You know, my daughter would, you know, she likes cricket because she likes sport. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Big Brother plays, you know, I play, although I don't think we used to play. I don't think that has much difference. But you know, she just wanted to try out cricket. So she got into playing cricket because she would watch her brother play his club cricket. And she liked the atmosphere of the club and got involved that way. She's not been to watch a county game or she won't watch cricket on TV. She's not interested in it, but playing it she is, because, you know, the local community we've got at Sanderstead, the ability to play cricket and learn and improve, etc. That's what she likes, and I think that's, you know, most of the kids up at Sanderstead aren't big watchers of the game. Yeah, they'll go down to the Oval, but at the end of the day, they want to play cricket at the sawmill with their mates. I think that's how you improve participation in grassroots cricket, by building communities and enabling those communities to be a welcoming environment that, you know, with a main core of being around playing cricket.
I like it. Dan, I'm going to bring you back in on this question in a second, because I'm going to pose one to I'm going to pose the controversial one to Aid first, so he can get his controversies out of the way. So recently, Dan, to set the scene, our league system in the North Staff South Cheshire League went to, we originally played a set of divisions that were A divisions, where your first team played and then your second teams played in the B version of that division.
Yeah.
Then we went to independent promotions and relegations, so your first team and second team could get promotion and relegation at free will, rather than just mirroring each other. And now we've gone to just an entire league system from Division 1 through to Division 9, where teams can get promoted and relegated at will all the way through. So, what we've noticed certainly in the last couple of years with the demise of a couple of cricket clubs is there is a couple of the bigger clubs really now dominating the number of teams in our local league. So we've got certain teams that have got first, seconds, thirds, fourths, fifths all playing on a Saturday. Lal, I'll go to you first. Good thing or bad thing for local cricket? Bigger clubs.
Yeah.
Absorbing these smaller clubs under their wing and sending out several teams on a Saturday. Good thing, bad thing?
I'd probably say a bad thing because, like, I think if you look at someone like Kisgrove and Our League, you've got, you know, they've had good quality
sides. This is the controversial North Staffordshire answer that I was looking for.
There you are.
They're not in your league anymore. They're in mine.
Not anymore.
Oh, that's what I mean. Yeah,
that's the problem. That's the point he's making.
Someone like Kisgrove, obviously been topside for years and years and years. And then over the last couple of years, you know, players have been going elsewhere and teams have got four or five teams. And then this year they've gone from Div 2 to, is it Div 7?
Yeah, I'm in 7.
Because they've literally can only field one team. But then you've got some teams that can have four or five sides. And it just doesn't seem... And, you know, as long as people are getting a game, that's a good thing. And that's what obviously everything's about. But you've got some teams that, like, you know, Kidsgrove, Wood Lane have struggled for second teams. And you could get to a point where if these teams don't, you know, pay out money for players, they're going to struggle to get first teams. And then you're going to lose a good club that's been in the league for years.
Turner. Many teams on a Saturday at the demise of others. Good thing or bad thing for local cricket?
I agree it's a bad thing. I think one of the things that cricket needs, and I think this is where almost county cricket and why people maybe don't get as involved in cricket as they do, say, football, is that there isn't as many clubs. There's not a local club to everyone. And if you then, in club cricket, the same happens and your nearest club's 4 or 5 miles down the road because the two nearest to you that were within 2 miles have gone bump. It's not as good because it's not as convenient. It's not as visible, I guess, to local children, to local people. So I don't think it's a good thing. But then at the same time, I don't blame the clubs that are becoming the big clubs because I haven't got a problem with Port Hill doing it. I haven't got a problem with Modishull doing it because it's not their fault that other clubs haven't been and ran as well, I guess, or haven't addressed the issues that they must have to get to that sort of numbers. And I know at Wedgwood, we've been probably been one of the clubs that have been very close at times to going down to one team. And we didn't have a junior section and we were relegated for not having a junior section. And we've probably got pretty darn close to being one of them teams that falls apart and ends up having to merge with a bigger club. And you can't criticise people who volunteer the time for free, fair play to them. But obviously there mustn't be enough people helping them or enough people with the right ideas because if it's a choice between your club going bump or joining up with another club, something's obviously been going wrong. And so I can't blame the big clubs for that. I can't blame them for taking over because they're ensuring everyone still is able to get a game of cricket and isn't sat at home watching crap TV on a Saturday. But I'd much rather us not have it, but I think it's almost become a necessary evil, which is a shame. I think the only thing you could say, which I know would be controversial, is that looking at like the Kidsgrove one, you look at where most of their first teams have gone. They've gone to Norton and Ailes, and I would dare say they're getting a bit of brass, let's be honest. And is it right that clubs are able to have 3 or 4 teams while they pay the first team, and in some cases even the second team, they're paying most of the players, if not all of the players, money? I don't think that's right. I understand you having a pro or maybe 1 or 2 good players to get paid, but there's talk of like certain teams and clubs paying players in second 11s, and that just sounds crazy to me. But
So as you can probably gather, Dan, there's a bit of controversy with, shall we say, talk of certain clubs up our way taking over, as it will.
Yeah.
What have your views from down south?
I find it, the situation you're describing there, quite sort of sad and tragic. I mean, you know, club cricket should be about playing cricket and building a community and you know, being sort of mates, enjoying themselves. When you've got people paying, you know, or being paid to play club cricket, other than, and I get it, you have a senior pro, you might have an overseas, but, and that's like the top clubs. But if you're paying, like, you know, a lot of players in a club and paying people to play second 11, that therein lies madness. You're losing the whole objective, because it's not a professional entertainment. It's, you know, why are you paying people to play for your club? Is it just because you want to win leagues and go up and get better? I mean, is that the objective?
There's a common saying up this way, Dan, because the only thing that the league winners get in the North Staff South Cheshire League is a flag. They get a flag to raise for 12 months. Well, I don't know whether... Do they get it permanently nowadays? I'm not sure. But
I don't know, but I've rarely ever seen this flag actually fly anywhere.
And the critics of... we describe it as being an open league, which we went to being a few years ago. Is the only thing that money will buy you is a flag. Yeah. Now there is a few arguments, to be fair. Now, certain clubs like ours at Bignall End, we don't have an overseas pro. Mm-hmm. We split, but we get the funding together for an overseas pro, as we always have done. And we will split that across what we call primary players. So we will have them. And we initially started doing that to kind of like supplement the competitiveness of the team. We had a few really barren years. We really struggled. We struggled to attract any players. We struggled to get overseas players in because the cost was shooting up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, it was the best way to keep us competitive and to make sure that we had teams, senior teams for the juniors to play in that were of a decent standard. And it really kept numbers and swelled the numbers in. To be honest, I think for us as well, doing things properly was really important. So certainly when we speak to players, we want people with the kind of the right minerals, should I say. So we speak to club people. And I'll be perfectly honest, I was a big advocate against it before it was discussed. And I honestly think for the future of our club, it was the best thing that we've ever done. Mm. And I would have no issue saying that. Because I was really worried, like Turner was, that at times that the club might go. And it's honestly the best thing we've ever done. Do we have an overseas pro that's going to win us the league on his own? No. But what we do is we have two or three really good lads who are very, 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 very good club cricketers who do an awful lot around the club and contribute a lot to the club. Mm. And
drink lots of pints.
And put a lot of that money back behind the bar. And certainly right now, having seen it on the flip side, I wouldn't have it. I would never ever go back to using our funding to get an overseas pro or anything like that. But what Turner's kind of referring to is there's some teams, certainly in the upper echelons. I mean, we've got an ECB Premier League at the top division, which is seriously good. I mean, Aid played in it. I've not had the pleasure, unfortunately. Turner and I haven't had the pleasure, but Aid a few years ago
never,
played
ever
in
get
it.
Near to that
place. No, I think I'd be a bit frightened, to be honest, again, playing in it. Some teams in that league have got current county championship players as their pro. I dread to think overseas professionals. But there is also rumours, and they are only rumours, we must state on the pod, we don't take sides here, there are only rumours that some clubs, what they do is they split their pro money set aside every year. And what they'll do is they'll split that amongst all of their lads to try and keep everyone interested. And I don't know whether that's a numbers thing or whether that's just to keep the club going or what. I've got no idea, but they are the rumours. So there's your little background of the dark arts of club cricket up here.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, we... Down here, we have in the Surrey Championship, which is the main Surrey League, and it's the one that feeds into the ECB Premier. So, you know, our ECB Premier League, it's top clubs where, you know, if you're a Surrey player and you're not playing for Surrey, then you'll play for, you know, Weybridge or Wimbledon or Reigate Priory or whatever, and they will have overseas pros too. And that's great, because I think if you're a youngster and you're breaking through and playing first 11 cricket as a like 15, 16, 17, 18 year old, then it's great to be playing alongside, you know, pros or overseas players or sort of, you know, ex-county players coming back, coming down. you know, I think that's fine. In the ECB Premier Leagues, or even the sort of the division below it. But I think once you get below that, I don't see why a club should be paying anyone. I mean, by all means, have your paying in the top leagues, but below the Premier and First, I think it's a bit sort of sad, really. You know, clubs should be about wanting to play cricket in your local community, and building a community around the sport. It sounds like, where you are, it sounds like people are kind of, you know, any minute, if they get a better offer from another club, then they'll go and follow the money. I mean, is that, I'm not sure if I've understood it properly.
Oh, but well, that's it. So I think this will answer your question, Dan. So me and Aid, like quite often during the winter, we'll talk to players about potentially coming and playing for us, people we know, lads we know, people we've played against. What's the first question that we always get answered if we asked if we approach someone to come and play for us?
How much?
How wow. much?
Wow.
And that has become almost, it's almost become like a sarcastic mocking comment that we say, don't we, to each other, and that people will, who are involved in their clubs, will actually say to each other. Because if you approach someone nowadays, the first question you will get asked is, how much are you giving me to come and play for you?
Wow. I mean, we've never, at Sarnerstead, we had an overseas pro for about 7 or 8 years. He's a Pakistan A player, Abdul Muzamil, lovely guy, brilliant. He helped us get out of the feeder league to the Surrey Championship, along with our, you know, the old warhorse, Simon Carter, who viewers will know. Those two, you know, they scored tons, they got wickets, and you know, they did a brilliant job, and they nurtured the youngsters coming through. Absey left about, when did he leave? I think 2017, halfway through the season. That was his last year. So we've been without since then. And we don't pay anyone. I mean, we've had some amazing players play for us, most of whom are homegrown. So, like, you know, Jacko, homegrown player. You know, Johnny, my son James, you know, Tricky Wilson, they've all come through our Colts section. And, you know, they're young lads, they'll go off and do their other things, like go to university, or not Tricky, and then come back. But you know, for me, it's about nurturing your homegrown players and building the strength of your cricketing side through the efforts that you make in your Colts. Not by buying people from somewhere else. So yeah, I'm proud that we've never played. You know, you can see some of the caliber of players. You know, we had Sharif for a couple of seasons. He was my most favourite player to film. He was absolute joyous to watch, and a lovely lad. But we didn't pay him. I mean, I think he's taking some money now. He moved on because someone has said we'll pay him. So that just defeated my entire argument.
Probably the downfall of your YouTube. You've given him free publicity. You've given him a career move, Dan, inadvertently.
No. I mean, everyone knows he just looks so good, and he plays in the same club he's gone to. He's in the same league as us. So this season, I am going to get to film him again twice, so I can rekindle my sort of, you know, cameraman player love affair with Sharif, because I just love watching him, and he's a great lad.
For those who've not seen a Sanderstead video before, all I'll say is I'm just hoping, Dan, certainly between you and me and anyone else who's seen one, that for Sanderstead's benefit, I hope Sharif doesn't get a very nice 50 and then kick on all the way to 100 and then 150 and does his usual trick on the videos of just getting a very, very nice 20 or 30. And then that'll do.
Just there. Himself, he specializes in getting pretty 30s.
Well, you should see Aid back, because he's a specialist in just being not out in no matter how many he gets. But that's
it's the average.
Yeah, it's a skill. It is a skill. Doing weird and wonderful things, it's an absolute skill. We've got another lad who's been mentioned on the podcast before as well, TP, who we seem to keep mentioning every week. But he's another one, isn't he, Aid? He was an absolute master of getting a brilliant 12 or 15 and looking absolutely unbelievable And then one of a few things will happen. You'll end up with an absolute snotter of a decision, or suppose it's a left-hander's curse, that one. Or you'll end up playing some horrific swipe. And you'll just think to yourself, you'll sit there and go, that's the best 12 I have ever seen in club cricket. Why? Why and how? But
I think he did end up with an average of 15 or something, didn't he?
He never got above 20 and still ended up averaging about 15. It was incredible. It's consistent, if nothing else. We're looking forward to having him back this year as well. Bar takings will be up, I'm sure. Dan, before the Surrey internet cut out and smoke signals had to be sent back out to you, we were obviously talking about fundraising efforts. Just wondered if you wanted to, I've obviously already seen the video talking about your next project. I just wanted to, if you wanted to have a talk about the next project that you've got going on and the video that you released in the funding page.
Yeah. I mean, we spent a bit of money in 2013 on getting new nets then, but they just haven't lasted. The mats are sort of rotted, and the actual foundations it's very undulating, and so they're not fit for purpose. And you know, unfortunately, it's one of those things where, with the gift of hindsight, we discovered that actually we sort of did it a little bit cheap, and you know, we got a good deal and whatever. And but you know, it's a bit like putting cheap tyres on your car. You know, you're only going to have to replace them sooner. So, you know, we've decided, well, look, we've got such a huge growing junior section with, you know, teams from under sevens to under 16s, girls and boys. I don't know how many teams we've got. It's over 20, you know, junior teams. It's incredible. I think it helps having quite a sort of catchment area. And so we have to have proper facilities for that, and obviously for our senior players too. And what we've got isn't fit for purpose. So, and last year we had, you know, it's really tough. We would normally raise money through end of season dinner, where we have we normally raise about $5,000 from that. Couldn't do that because of COVID. You know, we only had half a season, so the bar was only, you know, half full. And even when we were in the bar, you couldn't be in the bar. You had to be outside and socially distanced. So, you know, everything suffered. And, you know, we knew we had to get these nets. But we, you know, last year was the year when we were going to raise the money for it. We just couldn't. So someone said to us, someone said to me, look, you know, Sport England are doing some match funding if you do a crowdfund through Crowdfunder. So we had a look at it. I had a look at it, and I thought, yeah, I know, you know what, we should have a crack at this. So we did, and we're sort of midway through it, and you know, it's going well. We've got a little way to go, but Sport England are going to put in, you know, X amount if we get Y, and we've had another sort of grant, and we got a few little bits and bobs coming in, and the membership, and I'm really pleased to say, this is, you know, amazing. People around the world that watch the channel are sending money, putting money into our crowdfund. It's incredible how people that don't know us, you know, have never spoken to us, watch us from afar, are actually putting money into a crowdfunder to help us buy nets. That is, for me, is I would never have dreamt that in a million years. You know, someone.
I'm just looking through the comments here. So we've got good day from Hope Island, Queensland, Australia. We've got comments from Donna and Greg in Australia. You literally have got comments, and you've got the USA.
You
have literally got a following around the world, and it just goes to show, doesn't it, that. I think, well, not only if you do things in the right way, first and foremost, initially, but providing something that's providing, certainly, I think I've rewatched all of your videos and Three Bridges videos about three times over during lockdown and furlough, that you are providing something with someone that's bringing a lot of joy to a lot of cricket fans around the world. And they're repaying that.
Well, I think that's right, and I think the lockdown has helped. Someone said I'm the Colonel Tom of Captain Tom of grassroots cricket. I'm not sure how to take that, but and I wish I could, you know, have his money raising capability. But no, it's absolutely right. I had an email on. I woke up Sunday morning, had an email from a guy in New Zealand, who is a fan, and he and his wife went over to New Zealand. They're from the UK. They went over about a dozen years ago and set up a winery. They knew nothing about wine, but it was their dream to, you know, pack up the rat race and go and start a winery in the South Island near Otago. And the guy said, "Watch your channel, love it. I've got this winery. I've got a couple of cases in bond in the UK that you can have for your crowdfunder." So that's absolutely fantastic. So, you know, I'll take that. We'll flog it, you know, and again. But I'm going to, what are the prizes or rewards in the crowdfunder is to sponsor a match, which obviously it'll be filmed. And if you're a small business and you want to get some profile, sponsoring one of our games this season will get you, you know, 30,000 views probably, or maybe more. And I'll say nice things about you, assuming it's a business that, you know, is something that's something to, nice to be said about it. And you know, everyone will be happy. So I'm gonna promote, and this is, I think, a world first. It's going to be me commentating on an English club cricket match, promoting a New Zealand wine, essentially, that's not available here in this country, essentially promoting that wine to New Zealand fans.
can we have a challenge for the podcast, Dan?
Yeah, what?
I'd love you to just advertise and promote the most obscure item you possibly can. So if you have any applicants for like a really bizarre item, doesn't have to be dirty, it doesn't have to be like dodgy, but like, so on the verge of something that will provide like light entertainment for, especially for the lads and lasses between the ages of about 18 and 25, like us, who we just want to laugh when we're probably hungover, just hearing Dan Allen go, and today's Standerstead first team 11 game is sponsored by, oh, I don't know, what have we got?
Yeah.
Such and such elastic band company. I think we should have a challenge.
I love that idea. I mean, me and Tyler do this offshoot thing called Silly Point, because we're at the end of the day, we're not really cricket nuts. We just want to have a laugh, and you know, we want to try and look at the sort of silly side of cricket. And you just hit upon a great idea there. Yeah, no, I'm all for that. And I don't know if you may have noticed, last year I started a thing where, you know, whilst I'm walking around the boundary filming, or the lads are walking around, I'll ask questions. You know, so what? Like, it was a hot day when we played Epsom. It's like, so what's your favourite ice cream? And it was just so funny. You know, totally unexpected. And it was, you know, what's your favourite film? What's your favourite music artist? And it was great. And I'm going to start doing little sort of compilations of those. But
my personal highlight was the curry episode. Sorry? Favourite curry episode was a highlight for me. Yeah, that was a good one.
Good. Yeah. But no, I like that idea. If we could get someone out there that's got a really obscure product that wants it being promoted on our channel, then I'll give you a freebie. You know, if it's really obscure, you can have a freebie.
Done. You hear it here first. thanks for that, Dan. And if anyone does want the link, if anyone's a fan of Standerstead and you didn't know about the crowdfunder, if you are a fan and you didn't know, then where have you been, first and foremost? But if we're okay sharing it to you, and I'm sure we are, I'm sure there's no rules about it on resharing it through our social media, but if you do give us a listen, then feel free to have a wander over to the Standerstead YouTube channel and everything that they're doing. They do a lot of good work, and I must say the pictures look, the plans look really, really good, Dan. That's certainly what I wish we had them, put it that way. I love the blue down the sides for the images.
Yeah, no, it's a top
net. Looks the beans.
Yeah.
It does. So we wish you all the best in that fundraising effort, and it does just go to show what an untapped resource there is there. What I want to finish on then, Dan, and just in terms of the club cricket chat, before we have a look at England and the day one review, and before we talk about your room 101, something that you want to burn into the ether forever.
Yes.
we just want to talk about us club cricketers ourselves, our mainly club cricketers listening from the local area and from further afield. And we just wanted to talk about the Surrey Championship, really. We want to talk about the format that the lads play. We want to talk about what's good about the Surrey. What does the Surrey Trust League do well? What does the Surrey Trust League not do so well? What would you like them to try and maybe see and adopt or have a go at? Just to really see if there's anything that we like the sound of and we can kind of bang the drum for our league if we can.
Yeah, I mean, the Surrey Championship, I think it works well. I mean, it's. I heard what you were saying about your leagues where you can have, you know, your first team and your second team in the playing against each other in theory, I guess, or at least playing in the same leagues. Mm-hmm. What we have is we have a first 11 league with its divisions, second 11 leagues with their divisions, and third 11 leagues with their divisions. So you could have a situation whereby, you know, your first 11 might be playing, you know, Div 1 cricket, and your third 11 or second 11 might be playing Div 4 cricket. And that's kind of fine. You know, you find your level. But what it always means is that if you are a club that can sustain having four Saturday teams playing league cricket, as we do at Sarnerstead, then it's brilliant because you've got league cricket for, you know, 44 players every Saturday. And we actually have a fifth team as well on a Saturday. So you know, for me, it works quite well. From that point of view, my son James, he played because he was down in Southampton University. He played a season at St Cross in Winchester, which is a premier club, and he was playing in their second 11. Who Jason Laney, who opened the batting for Hampshire in the sort of whenever in the late 90s or something. He plays in their second 11. So you know, you get ex counties playing second 11 cricket, but they have. Their structure is slightly different. It's where you can have your second 11 playing in the same league as your first 11, not the same division, but the same league. So they had a situation where their premier club, their first 11 club was playing premier cricket, and their second 11, which is where James was playing, they got promotion from Div 2 to Div 1. So they're only one division below. So that seems a bit strange to me. Probably works for the real top clubs. But the championship, yeah, I think works. We have this sort of weird thing though, whereby you play each team twice, home and away. One game is a time game; it's a 100-over time game, and the other game is a 50-50 win or lose. And that's sort of, you know, it's kind of okay. It's nice to have that sort of, you know, two different types of cricket. But the time games are, yeah, they're not really any different to a 50-50 game, because 50 overs isn't really long enough to have a, you know, a timed game with a declaration and then, you know, try and bowl someone out. It just doesn't quite work that way. They all seem to work just like, you know, 50 over games. So, but yeah, so that works. And then you mentioned the Surrey Trust League.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, brilliant. And I recommend it to every county. What it is, it's a league intended for that sort of gap between junior cricket and adult cricket. And I think the way the Surrey Trust League works is it's something like you can have three players who are whoever you want, like over 21. They can be, you know, you can have three top first teams if you want. But you've got to have the other eight have got to be under 21, and I think five of them have got to be under 18 or something. So it makes sure that you have to have that sort of spread of ages. I've probably got it completely wrong, but you get the idea. Mm. You know, you can't just pack it with your first team. And for me, that is fantastic, because to have, you know, your 15, 16-year-olds playing alongside, you know, their first team hero in a proper competitive game wearing your coloured kit against other teams doing the same is really good. And it's not ultra competitive. You know, the first teamers that play know that they've got a job to do, which is not just to win the game. It's to nurture the younger players. And it just works, you know. It's so I thoroughly recommend it. Yeah, we entered it for the first time in, I think, 2014, 2015. We won two years on the trot, beating Premier clubs in the process, in the finals, which was great fun. But yeah, I recommend that. Do you have anything like that where you are?
We have like a rival league. It is a rival league, isn't it, Aid, I suppose, the Stoning District League. And it's something to, it is actually officially a separate league to the one that we play in on a Saturday, isn't it?
Mm.
The format's slightly different, but the premise is the same. There's not fixed rules on who can play and not play. That changes depending on what division your first team is. So you can't just stick. I think ours goes on like you can't stick someone who's leading your bowling averages or leading your batting averages can't play for your Sunday 11 unless they're under 18, because if they're under 18, it's they can do what they want. But other than that, pretty similar. No strict rules on age groups. It either goes one of two ways, doesn't it, for our Sunday 11s. It's either a Colts team with a few older heads in, like you've kind of described, whether it be older heads or actual first team players or second team players, or quite often what you'll get sometimes as well is you'll get teams that don't want to commit to the full day of a Saturday team. So you'll get quite a few clubs that are in the Stone League. They have like a standalone team, and that's their only team in their club that they just put in a Sunday team. So try and think of someone else. So like Fortin, only a very, very small club. What's that place that we lost to? Who were they? They'd never won a game of cricket before.
I've narrowed it down, mate. We lose to
them. They'd never won a game of cricket before, and we lost to them. It's out Crewe way.
Shavington.
Yeah, it's like Shavington way. But yeah, like Audlem. I know Audlem have got Saturday sides now, haven't they? But there are some that literally will only enter a side on a Sunday just for a knockabout. And the non-competitive, well, I say it is competitive, isn't it? It's competitive enough, but it's certainly not as serious as it is.
Well, the way it works here is that to be in the Surrey Trust League, you have to be, play, those games are on a Sunday and occasional Mondays, but your Saturday team, your main team, has to be playing in the Surrey Championship. So it is linked. You know, you can't have teams that come in and just play Trust cricket.
Mm.
And I think that's quite good, because that's what makes people take it slightly less seriously and enter into the spirit of what it's all about, which is nurturing younger players rather than being in it to win it.
Yeah. I know your feelings on it, Lyle. We've just changed our format of our playing conditions for Saturday. Do you want to talk about them, Lyle? What were you changed to this year?
Yeah, so we used to have win, draw and lose, obviously. And now we've doing
what was that? It was formerly a 110 over game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A few years ago, which they then shortened down to 100 over game of declaration cricket, and now next year we're on to a split season, aren't we?
Yeah. So am I right? Is it 45 overs each for the win, draw, and lose?
Yes, they're all 45 for us, aren't they? All of them.
I thought you said one was 40.
It could have been 40. I can't remember. It might have been 40. Yeah.
The win or straight, like the straight win or lose, might be 40. But
I
think it's still the same overs. Into you know, because you have to have five bowlers of, so nine for the 45 and eight for the 40, which I was all for giving, you know, splitting the workload for the bowlers and giving everyone a bowl and stuff like that. And I'm happy now. Now we've actually got half a season without the draw. I think that's, you know, a slight improvement. And I also think that the only problem of it, I think, is with it being 45 overs and having a draw, you're going to get quite a few draws over actual, you know, proper results, I'd say. But if you push it to 50, I think, you know, I think 50 overs would be fair, and have 40 maybe for the win and lose stuff. That's my views anyway.
We had a bit of a trial last year in the COVID era. I think clubs were a bit standoffish of changing anything from what it's been for years and years, Dan, and then last year kind of forced the hands a little bit to try something different, and actually we all enjoyed it a lot more than I think we all thought we would. Certainly the 40 overs win lose is it happens a lot quicker, goes a lot quicker, it's a much quicker day. makes it a bit more exciting. So that was good. I think everyone's a bit surprised that the win, lose, draw has stayed at 45 overs, which is a bit
short, isn't it?
As Aid says, it's a bit short. You're going to have to work hard. But they have tinkered with the points to make it more worth your while, I think, to get a win out of a win, lose, draw game in 45 overs.
Yeah. Although, there's a really, really good draw can be great cricket.
I totally agree, Dan, and I would argue for the draw every day that there is skill. Turner and Aid will disagree with me here, but there is an absolute skill in the senior way to a good draw.
Absolutely. I mean, trying to winkle out those last two or three wickets, situations where you might even give a side some runs to get them a bit closer to draw them in. It's a lost art. I mean, that's what I grew up on. It was brilliant. And this sort of, win or lose, 40 overs, wham, bam. It's just a bit one-dimensional. That's the moanings of an old codger.
Right then, club cricket. Let's move on to India versus England. This might not take long.
I have watched, because I don't normally watch, but I have watched quite a bit of this, and I watched quite a lot of the game today. I mean, my first thought was, my God, they've learnt nothing from Chennai, where the wickets were minefields. And they've done it again. It's sort of, so you lose the toss and you lose the match. But then actually watching the game, you thought, this track isn't quite as bad as the Chennai track. And we've done it to ourselves. Well, they're good bowlers, right? But, seven people shouldn't get out without laying a ball on the bat. Four bowls and three award. No, four LBWs and three bowls. What's wrong with the bat?
we'll talk about it in a brief second as well, but certainly if I was playing over there, I wouldn't let the ball go anywhere near my legs, because I'd be fearing what was coming next if I let it anywhere near my legs. Turn it. Right, so I've got 3 points written down. Let's start with this one then. Team selection. Correct team, not the correct team. What are we saying?
Looking at that pitch, there's no way you can say it's the correct team. I think it's harsh on Stuart Broad, but I want to pick Stuart Broad. I'd have picked Dom Bess. He adds a bit of batting, and he's a spinner. And I think, although I could understand it in a way, not going for the spinner, because you were just going to hope that the pink ball did a lot. I think they should have just gone with Bess. I think it'd have worked better, but I can understand going for Broad, but I wouldn't have gone for Broad if I was going for another swing bowler. I'd have gone Wokes, because he's gone all that way for that long, give him a game, and B, he can bat, and I think we were always going to need as small a tail as possible, as short a tail as possible, and we've lengthened it, we've made it even longer, and you look at India and you just think it was always going to be a gamble either way, but they've got the gamble right. They've gone for an extra spinner and that extra batting option, and it's looking like that's going to be the difference will be is their spinners are much better and their batters are much better, but it's going to compound the woes, I feel, for England, that they've got someone at 8 and 9 who can hold a bat compared to England who've got, well, I like Jofra and Brodie and Leach, but you can't class them as anything.
It's not quite Goff and Tufnell, is it? But it's
getting too close for comfort.
It doesn't exactly fill you with comfort. It is, again, love club cricket on the pod, but it's appealing to the club cricketer and all of us, the fact that the batsmen actually end properly at about 6. So if we get them 5 down, lads, they're absolutely snookered. That is it. So we're probably the wrong person to ask here, but Lal, the batting, sum it up for us. 112, was it, I think?
Yeah. Well,
I didn't think we were going to get that many for a while.
Was it 25 to 9 when we won the toss? And then from about 2 minutes past 9, that was it, mate. That was... from what I've watched, Zach Crawley played brilliant for his 50. Played some lovely shots. Looked like, he looked good. He looked like... Just compared to Sri Lanka, where he just kept getting out for literally nothing, he looked like he'd worked on his game when he's had the chance, and he batted brilliant. Root again got himself in. But let's apart from that, I think, if anything, they were playing for the ball that spun a bit, but actually it was the straight ball that was getting them out a lot.
Yeah. I think they said, I think NASA said that on his Sky article for the end of the day, that he doesn't think that anyone who got out to one of the spinners actually got out to a ball that turned.
The odd one did turn, but the ones that actually got him out wasn't.
Straightened rather than turned, didn't
they? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Dan makes a good point. I think there was 4 LBWs, a couple of balls. Can we actually say that anyone got a good ball? That's what I'd be saying. Did anyone actually get, you know what, you look at it and just go, oh, well bowled, sir. I'll look at Sibley opening the bat in and you just go, yeah, okay, he's had a bit of a dangle. It's not the worst shot in the world. He's nicked off to slip. It's going to happen. But other than that, I don't think you look down at anyone and go, oh, yeah, well bowled, that man.
The best one was Bairstow reviewing that. I was like, mate, that is hitting middle of middle, and you are reviewing it.
I think he genuinely thought he hit it, though. The response from him and what he seemed to be pointing at was that he genuinely thought he did it. He clearly didn't. God knows what he did it.
Yeah. No, mate, I'll tell you what that is. He's had 2 weeks on the all-inclusive back in England, and he didn't want to be out for a duck on his return. So he fancied a review just because he saved him the embarrassment. Are we saying that's the game gone, then? What do we reckon?
Well, as Turner said,
he finished 90-odd for 3.
As Turner said, either a couple of quick wickets and we're back in it, and me and you were like, have a day off, mate.
Mate, in all seriousness, when they got them 2 down, if they'd have took another 2 or 3 like India did to us, you were genuinely back in the game. As much as I didn't ever believe we were going to do that, because I don't believe our bowlers are good enough in them conditions to do... I think their batsmen aren't as... I don't think our batsmen are bad, that's the thing. I don't think they've got a game plan. I don't think they're confident against spin. And I think that's what lets them down. Not their ability against spin, but the game plan. So I didn't see India ever losing another 3 wickets quickly. But as much as we were crap, we were only probably landing a couple of catches that we let go, and maybe an umpire siding on our side for one of these debatable calls for once. And we would have been stupidly and undeservedly still in the game, which is stupid because we shouldn't be anywhere near the game.
I don't think we are anywhere near the game.
Well, no, we're not now. But
no, a couple of quick early ones tomorrow.
No, no. I'm past that. No, to be honest.
Technically, no, we are in the lead.
Well, yeah, small mercies. For how long, I don't know. But
if it gets called off now, do we claim the win?
Absolutely.
we're going to the last test 1-1 if it rains for 4 days. That's what I'm clinging on to right now.
The Pope dismissal kind of summed England up, because the ball before, he come down the wicket, trying to be proactive to it, and then the ball after, he was just literally like off and off, wasn't forward, wasn't back, and then pegs everywhere.
Well, we said this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, after the first test, after the second test. He looks like a lad who's not played cricket for 10 months, which is exactly what he is. He's not had a game, he's had a few knocks in the nets. He's gone to Sri Lanka. He's not played any cricket. He's probably not bloody practiced a lot, because I don't know what practice they would have been able to do. And it's not exactly a feather bed to go and get your eye in, is it? It's playing on a snake pit in bloody Chennai and wherever, and then expecting to kind of like rack up more runs for your country when you've barely had enough. Turner's touched upon it already. Then we might as well get it out. Been my favourite part of the day, just baiting people online and on Twitter. The umpiring. So, for those who haven't been watching along today, I won't call them snotters. They weren't snotters. What I will say is the official in me, the Democrat in me, will say the process wasn't exactly followed to the letter on a couple of occasions. So we've had a catch by Ben Stokes, which England have claimed. Ben Stokes was adamant. The third umpire has taken one look from the furthest away camera angle and said, not out. We've had a... What else do we then have? We've had a review of an LBW that was, well, in real time. I just said it was out and it was umpire's call, and I'd have questioned whether they thought the same. We had Leach and the catch that took Leach off the pitch, which again I think the correct decision was made in the end, but all I'll say, there were some camera angles that certainly made it look not out. And then we finished off the day with Rohit Sharma stumping, which, just like the last test, as I sit here convinced that it's out. And I do not understand for the life of me why he's still batting, because he's just out. And again, third umpire watched one angle and one angle only and said there is conclusive evidence that his foot's behind the line. Just to stick his foot in it first, Dan Allen, have you seen them and what do you think of them?
Well, I think of the ones that you mentioned, I saw the stumping. I was doing some work, so I had the sound down. And I saw Root have a real go at the umpire. I don't know what he was saying, but I could kind of guess. But I get your point. But if you're the umpire watching that, his foot was behind the line when the bails are off. The question is, was it raised or not? And you kind of couldn't tell. I mean, could his toe have been touching some of the grass? I mean, his foot was moving, but that doesn't mean it's not raised. So, but to take your point, where was the other angle? There's always another angle, isn't there?
Mm. And
I think
unless you're in India, clearly.
They've been poor at looking at all the angles. That one in the previous test or the first test, whichever one it was, where it was obvious that the ball, it was I can't remember who was out, but it was the one where they felt the ball touch the glove on the way through. And they never looked at that.
Nope.
That for me was the real shocker, because they always look at every possible way. You know, even if they've gone up for a caught behind, they'll still look for the LBW. Yet on that occasion, when it would have been clearly out, they didn't even look at it. So, yeah, I don't know whether it's because they're inexperienced or other reasons.
Other reasons. That's very that's very politically correct of you. I think my favourite on social media today has been, where is it, if I can find it, the collection of people online. I'll give you three guesses of which cricketing nation they hail from, who said that that English cricket supporters are being very salty about this because they don't agree with, what was it, Turner? Was it interpretation or opinion-based decisions or something?
Yeah, something about it. If it's marginal and can be
Marginal. Marginal and interpretation. We're moaning because we don't agree with the margins and the interpretation. Well, to those people, I'd say that is a very, very, very clever way of saying they're wrong and this is how we are going to cover up that they are wrong.
My point is if you're marginally out, you're still out.
Yeah.
If you're marginally in, you're still in. I don't understand.
That's what sport is, so a fine margin, isn't it? It's
like, exactly.
In the book.
And DRS just makes the margins finer. I mean, you know, you've got the situation now whereby, you know, the gap in between frames is where the action happens, you know? If you were filming at 100 frames per second, then you would see everything, right? But if you're filming it, then normally, what are they? They're normally sort of 24, 30 frames per second. Then, yeah, there's enough room in the gap for the difference between being in and being out.
I think what got to the... That wasn't a great look that Joe Root gave us, Dan, as you've alluded to, when he was giving a bit of tiff to the umpires. I know we criticised Coley last week, didn't we, for going off on one, and I don't think it was a good look for Root because we praised him for kind of keeping his being Mr. Cool. But if I was an England player, I'd be pretty pissed by now. We're two tests in, and they only seem to be happening to us. That's all I'm saying. I can think of five or six now, and they're only happening to us, and I would be getting pretty frustrated if I were them.
I'm going to get called a hypocrite here, but I actually have no issue with Joe Root being like that, because for me, the issue was as Coley was harassing an on-field umpire basically over his decision, which is human error. It's just one of them things. So I don't understand. I wouldn't harass an on-field umpire for their decision. And it was a one-off decision that was going to have no real effect on the game. Whereas Root, that is numerous times that there's been an issue. And I don't think he's harassing the on-field umpire because of the on-field umpire's decision. I don't think that's the issue, even though some of them decisions seem to have been based more on who the crowd is and who's appealing for it. I think he's clearly asking the umpire why on earth his colleague, who's got all the technology, does not use the technology. There's clear inconsistency. There's a clear lack of process being followed. The fact that there's always a TV director, so BCCI will have a director there who should be telling him, just check these angles first, just to make sure it's conclusive, like we all hear on any other coverage. And that's just not happening. And I think that's and I think that's what Silverwood and Root have come out with and said, basically, after the game. They spoke to the match referee and said, we have no issue with these decisions going against us, as long as we can trust that you've followed the process. But the process isn't being followed for England when it benefits India, but it is the other way around. And why is that? And I don't think they want to come out and say they think they're being biased, but I think that's it's getting past a coincidence now for both the England players and for, it seems, quite a lot of pundits and journalists as well are starting to get to the, this isn't a coincidence anymore. Why is it that you can't follow a process when it's going to go against India or may go against India?
I've seen a great one as well at the close of play today, that an argument has started about the Ben Stokes catch. Now, I'm with you, Turner. In my opinion, that was probably not out. And I just said, I always put the shoe on the other foot. I do it when we're watching football. I always say, what would I want if that was happening against Stoke? And in this situation, I'm saying, what would I want if it was against England? So if Ben Stokes claimed that catch and it was an England batsman, I'd say, that's not out. That's touched the ground. But I think I saw an argument online about two people having an argument about where does the ground actually start? Does it start at the tip of the grass? Does it start at the base of the grass? Like, is this really what it's come to? Now, my main issue with that is the fact that he had one look, because I had no idea after one look. But he had one look and said categorically, that was it. He's out. He's not out, sorry. Overturning your decision. And as you say, I think the process of it, more than anything, is the thing that's really getting to people.
Before you just move on away from this, it's not umpiring related, but my highlight of the game has to be that LBW shout that, to me, looked like it was smashing the stumps. I think it was very close to not being umpire's call and being out. And I have no issue with umpire's call, but I'm not sure who it was. I don't know whether it was Kartik or whether it was Sonny. I wasn't really paying masses of attention. But as soon as it hit and Broad went appealing, it was absolutely no chance. That's going way over. At first look, and I was like, what? Am I eyes deceiving me? And I think that's almost exasperated a lot of England fans' frustrations, that you're then listening to a commentary team that seem unable to debate anything, unless because all that matters to them is that it goes India's way, it seems. And I know there's been comments from people of other countries before who say they've watched, and Star Sports or whatever broadcaster it is are very biased towards the home team. And I think you always can get a little bit of bias towards them, but I think it's that was funny, one of the funnier moments. And the fact that we're so used to, probably, if anything, our pundits wanting to go against England half the time so that they have something to say and get themselves in the papers. It just seems, commentary seemed a bit bizarre at times when, especially now Mark Butcher's gone, because I don't think Graham Swann's particularly the greatest wordsmith out there either.
I think he likes the Indian
rupees as well.
I actually think I heard Graham Swann say today that if you run down the wicket at a bowler, that changes how much it bounces. And I was genuinely trying to work it out for a good 10 minutes or so, whether he'd actually said what he'd actually said. I'm just trying to sift through the...
I'm going to use that.
What's that one?
I'm going to come right down the wicket and say, umps, can't be out, mate. Would have bounced clearly over that.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Like, I'm trying to find an absolutely unbelievable tweet that I saw, really, that was absolutely top class, that summed up the commentary, because you're right, Turner, the commentary was absolutely horrific. Where it said something like, I'm pretty sure these commentators are that biased, they take out a risk assessment with the BCCI if they wanted to go for a piss. and that just made me chuckle, because you're right, that LBW, it was too high, then he'd hit it, then it was going down, then we were back to too high, and even when they saw the sticko, they said he'd hit it. And he hadn't. It's just... and then you've got Sunil Gavaskar, one of the greats of Test Match cricket, especially so in Asian Test Match cricket, offering people on in the car park after the game. It was one of the brilliant best things I've ever heard. You've got Simul Gas.
You've then got you've got changed into someone goes, no, you mean come round for a coffee and we'll just...
You've got Sunil Gavaskar going, if anyone thinks that catches out, you can come and meet me at the car park and we'll sort it out. It's absolutely berserk. And I think
here's a little piece of trivia for you. Both Sunil Gavaskar and Mark Butcher, the two people you just mentioned, were present in a match at the Old Sawmill in Saunderstead on the same day. Back in 1981, I think it was. So there you go, bit of trivia.
That is, that's a stat. I wish we had something like that.
England have got me and you, mate. They don't need anything else.
Yeah, you've got us, I suppose. Yeah, I think we should leave England there anyway. Right then, my favourite bit of the week to finish. If anyone listened to Benny Howell and his complaints about cricket and club cricket, there was many. I believe they all got voted in, Turner, is that right? Into room 101?
Yeah, according to Benny Howell and Jono, you've got to have a shower. You've no getting away from the shower. There is no shit teas. You make a good tea or don't bother. no under 18s allowed into the WhatsApp chat unless they're willing to get involved in stuff that may involve, shall we say, dark humour and pornographic images. And then to finish it off with, I hate to tell Jono, but the draw in limited overs games was also voted. So people want the draw, but not in the limited overs games where it's 40 overs or less.
I like that. There's a compromise been made at least.
So I think if you got 50 overs or more, people would vote to keep it. But 50 overs, it seemed to be 45, 40 and less was where there's no point having a draw.
50 or over for me is where you keep it. And then anything under that, it's too short of a game.
Yeah.
Mm. So we draw on our guest for this week then. Dan, we'd like you to come up with something that you want to abolish into club cricket room 01 for the rest of time. What we say?
Okay, for me, and this is partly as a result of a lot of comments that I get on the YouTube channel, and it's I would abolish people haranguing bowlers for being chuckers in club cricket. You know, so many people will see someone who's got a sort of slightly suspect action or a funny action, which makes it look like they might have a bent arm, even though they probably haven't, or certainly not to the requisite degree. And I get so many comments saying, oh, he's a chucker, that one. You know, it's like, so what? You know, they're out there playing club cricket. No one's getting any advantage from a bent arm in club cricket. Just drop it, you know. Make more intelligent comments rather than slag people off, especially young lads who may well be still learning their trade. And the last thing you want is someone who they don't know, some keyboard warrior, slagging them off and maybe putting them off. There you go.
Right. Okay. Then. So the vote will be out on the Twitter. So suspect actions in club cricket. Should we have the caveat, especially in, should we say, I don't know how to kind of phrase it politely to everyone. So I don't want us to advocate, Dan, that in like Premier Cricket, top divisions, we're going to have slightly suspect actions being let out to get away with it. But certainly we'll just put the caveat of club cricket, actions.
Exactly. So lower level club cricket, don't worry about slightly suspect actions. Yeah, if someone's walking up and bloody chucking the ball, then that's, you know, so it's actions that probably aren't suspect, but might look a little bit suspect when people having a go at them.
To be fair, I've seen some overseas pros with some pretty suspect actions before. Never mind the lads playing club cricket.
Well, there's been test bowlers with, you know, hundreds of wickets. Anyway, won't go there.
No, that is a kind of worms that we might not want to get into. Right then, just to sum everything up then, Club Cricket 101 is going to be on the Twitter. Check that out, get your votes in, and we'll see if Dan's suggestion makes it into room 101 next week. Make sure that you're entering the getaway, the club cricket getaway. Send us your best funnies, club cricket stories. We have some great ones, as we say every week. They normally involve nakedness and drinking. Not that we condone nakedness and drinking together or nakedness at all in any kind of form, but they do make the best stories by the looks of things, and get yourself the opportunity to send them in to us and win yourself some Woodstock kit. Make sure you check out the Woodstock code on our Twitter and social media accounts. Get yourself 25% off. You want to see some Kit Turner's got his all over his social media. He's obviously after a freebie somewhere. Sunday, we've got the live podcast, so stay tuned for that on social media as well. If you want to see us bickering and moaning, we might have to bring it forward 48 hours because I'm not sure whether we'll even last a Sunday, but there you go. And really, just a big thank you to Dan Allen from Sanderstead Cricket Club for joining us tonight. I've had my fangirl moment now, Dan, so thank you very much.
Pleasure.
We really appreciate your time, really appreciate you coming on. Make sure you check out the Sanderstead crowdfunding page. It's available on their YouTube channel, and if you've never watched any of the videos before, get involved, have a watch. It's a club doing things the right way and wanting to do things the right way and raising money the right way. And Dan, credit to you and praise to you for everything you're doing for club cricket up and down the country and for Sanderstead Cricket Club. So thanks very much for your time, Dan. We really
appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been great fun. And one day, hopefully, we'll come on tour and we'll come and find you.
Absolutely. It's normally windy up at our place, so bring plenty of layers. That's all I'll say. Thanks very much to the guys. Really appreciate it. I've enjoyed leading this week, Turner. Thanks very much.
It's all right, mate.
You've had the chop, Turner.
I might be having the chop if the listen's going down. Big appreciation for everyone who's following along. All the views we're getting, wherever you are. Really appreciate it. Next week, who have we got on next week, Turner?
Next week, we have got a guest. Andy's going to rejoin us, basically, just so he can give up his £5 for getting his bet wrong at the beginning of the series, because I think that'll be all gone by then. And hopefully we'll be able to announce who our charity is.
Yes.
But next week's going to be a little bit of a mixed bag, to be fair. We've got a few things sort of lined up. Obviously, the Dear England. We're going to have a little bit of a talk about the transfers and pros locally. And we'll go through our giveaway winners and we'll go through the story. So there should be a few laughs guaranteed, if nothing else, for people.
Brilliant. Thanks, everyone, for listening along. Really appreciate your time. Hope you enjoyed yourselves. And make sure you give us a follow on every social media you possibly can. We look forward to hearing your horrendous stories this time next week. Thanks very much.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky. With so many options to choose from, how do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning, high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes. Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.